And my favorite part as a CFO is to take it and say, okay, what is this story actually telling us? And what do we need to change in order to change the ending of this story?
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. My name is James Kennedy. I'm the CEO and co-founder at ProcurementExpress.com. We take the hassle out of managing your SMB spend without buying ERP, but we're not here to talk about that today. Instead, I've got Joey Albertson from The Profitability Project, a fractional CFO based out in Utah. And Joey has brought with her a fantastic case study for why you should consider hiring a fractional CFO, especially if you're a SaaS founder just like me. So it's going to be a bit of inside baseball today. I don't know even how baseball works, but I presume we're going to talk about the inside of it. And we're going to talk about SaaS. We're going to talk about how these companies sometimes can basically find money. If you hire someone like Joey, a fractional CFO, she can come in and help to dramatically improve the finances, but not just in a woolly way. In this way, Joey managed to find $2.5 million in unbilled revenue within 30 days of her starting to work with this company. So she's given me a guarantee she can do that for any SaaS company. So I'll be sitting on a beach somewhere after this recording. I won't need to do any more work, but it'll be a good one. So Joey, thanks very much for coming on the show. Maybe you can kick us off by telling us something about you that not many people know.
Yeah, one of the kind of interesting facts about me is that I am actually a fourth generation entrepreneur, which originally meant that I was never going to be an entrepreneur after watching the struggle and the roller coaster of it. And then by maybe fate or DNA, I don't know, it really landed in my lap and I discovered that I really am meant to follow in those footsteps and be an entrepreneur myself.
Interesting, because we'll get into this a little bit later, but you did work in what I call the belly of the beast. You had a proper job. And you were like, no, all that craziness, I'm going to go and get a stable, normal job. And that's going to be brilliant. And you thought that was going to be, you're going to get your job, retire at 60, and that'll be it.
Definitely was raised watching the roller coaster of entrepreneurship. And I respect my parents and grandparents and great grandparents for everything that they did. But one of my parents definitely encouraged me, clock in, clock out, go home, enjoy your life. This doesn't have to be, your work doesn't have to be your life. Keep that in mind. And so that was my plan. I definitely thought I would do that. And I did for a long time. And I really enjoyed it. I really didn't ever think that I was going to leave. I for sure thought I would retire the traditional way.
So I have to ask, was it your mom or your dad who encouraged you to get a traditional job?
My mom. Definitely, yeah. Which is hilarious because she and my dad are both entrepreneurs. They both own a business and do business consulting. And yeah, but my mom was like, you deserve better than this.
Yeah, my mom and my grandma both petitioned me regularly to get a real job. And many years ago, I was on an entrepreneurial program in Chile. Chile would give you 50 grand if you moved there and started a business. So I did that, mostly to pay my tax bill in Ireland, but that's a different story. And my grandma rang me up. She said, oh, I heard the great news, James. And I was like, oh, this is great. She's getting on board with James, the entrepreneur. She says, yeah. I hear the Chilean government has given you a job. I'm so happy, you know, like, and I was like, she finally thought I got his government job. And no, turns out not. But anyway, all right. Well, I hear your, and what about your, well, let me get this right. Great grandparents, mm-hmm. How were they? What business did they run? Do you know?
Yeah, they owned a restaurant and they ran that together and they had three little kids. And the three little kids, in many ways, raised themselves while mom and dad put in 12, 14, 16 hour days at the restaurant running it single-handedly. And my son is actually named after that great grandpa. He went on to do a lot of amazing things for the community and the college here and really built the community in so many ways after his restaurant burned down one night and they had to reinvent themselves and start over. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Crazy stuff. Oh my God. Yep. And then his son was a dentist and really loved business ownership and did all of the business development. I think we talked about, he was the grandpa that had the tapes of Zig Ziglar in the car, in the station wagon, you know, going all the time. And then on the other side, my dad's dad is an artist and has been a professional artist his whole career. And then now my parents are both business consultants.
Very good. All right.
A lot of everything. Okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, there's no real pattern there. Artist, dentist, retail owner, now CFO. Okay. Well,
the
I guess you're
common
kind of
thread is starting our own thing. So yeah.
You're diversifying. Okay. All right. Yes. Well, cool. I have a lot of empathy for that because that was in my family too. So,
yes.
But okay. So, but now let's not everyone gets on the show, Joey. You got to be credible. You got to have the expertise. You had to have the goods. So tell us a bit about how you got started in finance to build yourself up to the situation where you now can call yourself a fractional CFO.
So again, untraditional route here, but I ended up moving to a really small town with my husband after getting married, and I was pregnant with my first and just really was looking for a part-time job and got hired as a payroll specialist with zero experience. And the rest is really history. I went again the corporate route, kept that job and fell in love with finance and just kept wanting more and more of the pieces of it. And as soon as I really realized that this is what I wanted to do, and now I was pregnant with my second at the point, I went back to school for finance and accounting, and then worked my way up through that job to become director of finance. And then shortly after that, moved to a different corporate job here in Utah after moving back. Utah's home for me. Thanks. So we moved back and I got a corporate job there, again, kind of climbed that ladder. And then a few years into that is when I started this by accident. So lots of experience with small business. I've touched every piece of finance at one point or another, whether it was payroll or billing and collections, bookkeeping. Controller services was my job here in Utah, and then moved up to CFO and then started this. And then I really feel like I gained a lot of experience doing this as well, just by the sheer volume of clients that I saw in the different industries that I was in. That's given me a lot of education about small business and how to be a transformational CFO, take them from very limited budget but needing to scale to that, you know, 5, 10 million, 25 million annual reoccurring revenue spot with very limited resources. I would say that's really what I specialize.
Very good. Okay. So we'll get into a little bit. You've been fairly successful from what I can see in marketing your services. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later on. But let's start off with this case study of this SaaS company. So SaaS, I guess, if you don't know, is a software as a service. It's just like Pyramid Express. So you bill monthly, your clients, they use it all over the world. Nice business if you can build it up. But you were able to add 2.5 million in top bottom line profits, as far as I can see, within 30 days. So tell us, set it up for us here. What sort of SaaS was it? Who were they selling to? How did you get in touch with them? And how did you discover this saving for them?
Yeah. Okay. So getting in touch with them and kind of getting involved in this project, it was the end of 2023, and we had been in business for a few years now. Actually, my first big client was a SaaS company, and we had done some transformational work over there. And so, like most of my clients and most of my introductions, it really came about through a referral and through the grapevine of people that I just network with and who know what I do. And so they had kind of heard what I had done over here, and they said, well, maybe, you know, you could do something similar for our company, and we're looking for a little bit of help. And so it was a good friend of mine, and he just brought me in to basically consult. And initially, it was to come in and manage their existing controller and what they were calling controller and bookkeeper.
Okay, let's press pause there for a second. So First of all, if you're a fractional CFO going, how are all these people just getting referrals to great clients? It's very frustrating, but that's a common theme, I think. Sometimes that just happens. The more you're out there, the more good work you do, the better you do, and so on, cascades. But when you say so-called controller, I get the feeling like, what's the difference between a real controller and what this person was doing, if I was to get spicy straight away?
Well, I guess a good line in the sand for me is, if I'm able to find $2.5 million in the first 30 days, they're probably not doing any controller work. So
touche.
That's kind of a good indication. For me, controller should really be cash flow minded. They are not necessary. I mean, obviously financial statements are important, data is important, but cash should always make sense for the controller. And as you'll come to find out, as we kind of get into the story, cash was really the issue here and the only issue. Everything else on paper looked fantastic. There just wasn't any cash and no one could figure out why. And so, yeah, more of a, they were more bookkeeper, staff accountant role for sure. Very skilled in that area. I think classic case of wrong seat for the wrong person type two.
Okay. So for decades now in business, I've heard the term balance sheet reconciliation, and I've always sort of nodded along. Yeah, sure. Yeah, we should definitely do one of those. That's a great idea. Let's go do it. And to be honest, I have no clue what it means. But I think today is going to be the day that I understand it properly, because this is one of the first things you do with a client, right? So what is it? And why does it matter?
Yeah, so this is a little bit of a hot take, I think, in the industry from what I've learned with working with tax firms and CPAs, especially here in the U.S. So there are, in order to be compliant in the U.S., under a certain number of assets and, you know, revenue, basically, you're not legally required to reconcile the balance sheet in order to provide financial statements that are clean and clear. And I disagree. I think that just because it's not legally required doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. And maybe one, if not 100 cases that I've seen that solidifies that belief for me. But a balance sheet reconciliation, according to the industry, is reconciling bank accounts and credit cards to their statement to ensure that they're matching, nothing weird is happening in the books that didn't actually happen, and doing that on a regular basis, typically monthly. In my business, and what I recommend for all business owners, regardless of what stage you're in, is actually reconciling every single balance sheet account. All assets, all liabilities, all equity accounts should be reconciled on a monthly basis. And I believe that because of this case and many others like it, because that is where the bodies lie, as I like to say. The balance sheet is where the bodies are found.
Okay.
So that's where all the dirty secrets are.
Okay, I'm going to admit something even more embarrassing now, right? I hear the word reconciliation. I hear the word reconciliation, right? And I go, yes, we must reconcile that. But what does that literally mean? When you say, give me an example, like, I don't know, an account on the balance sheet, and what does it literally mean you do when you reconcile that account?
Yeah, so think of like balancing your checkbook, right? If anyone even remembers what that means, but what we do is we literally look at every transaction that was posted in your financials, in your accounting software, maybe, and we take the statement from the bank account, if it's a bank account, right? And we match every transaction so that the balance at the beginning and the balance at the end and every transaction matches. And a lot of people, and in reality, this happens for a lot of people, are like, yeah, the software can do that itself. That's what the software is designed to do. And again, like that, for the most part, that happens, except for when it doesn't. And when it doesn't happen, it can go off the rails so very quickly, and you would never even realize it unless you are literally matching every transaction. Luckily, accounting softwares do make it very easy. So I'm not going, you know, transaction by transaction. It's pretty easy to make it happen. But for liabilities, there are statements for your loans that you get, and you should be reconciling off of that, you know, see how much interest was taken out, see which payments went towards the loan this month. You would not believe how many things you would find posted by the software automatically because it was routed wrong or integrated with some other software that messed things up, or the bookkeeper didn't really know what they were doing, or the controller didn't really know what they were doing, or, you know, a million things can and do go wrong every single day. And so it may sound like overkill, but is $2.5 million worth of mistakes worth the overkill? I think yes. You know what I mean? I think that's worth it. So
absolutely. Okay. Yeah. So tell me, bring on the journey here of where did this come from? Where did this 2.5 million pop out of the air, or how did you discover it?
Yeah. So sadly, this is the second case that I found of something very similar at this level, 150 cases just like this, but in the millions, this is the second. So yeah, we came in and we looked at the books, and I just immediately red flags because things were not being reconciled. And so I had a feeling, right? That's spidey senses were tingling as soon as I got in there. And so I collected all the statements and for every single balance sheet account and started reconciling. And what happened was the team was invoicing, putting invoices into the accounting software. And then when money would come into the bank and they would get deposits, they would go mark invoices as paid, as you should, right? The problem was that some customers had payment information in the books. And so instead of waiting for the money to come into the bank, they could click, hey, charge this customer, and then the accounting software would mark the invoices paid. During a transition of personnel, this exact training must have gotten missed or something got miscommunicated, because instead of clicking charge customer to mark as paid, they just clicked mark as paid. And so invoices were being marked that cash was received. No cash ever actually came in. And the customer is none the wiser because they don't receive an invoice in this case. And they're certainly not calling us, telling us, hey, you didn't charge me. Could you make sure to charge me next month? You know, they've got stuff to do and they are going to get away with it as long as they can, probably. And so the books were reflecting all of this revenue and all of this cash being collected. And the bank account was depleting and depleting. So by the time I came in, they said, we're just really in a cash flow crunch and we just cannot figure out why we're so profitable, but there is no cash in the bank. And to the owner's credit, he knew that his team was somewhat junior, but he really thought, you know, they are good at what they do and they are capable of running this. They might just need a little bit more experience, a little bit more explaining. And he wasn't incorrect. So,
yeah. Okay. So it's in his defense, let me speak up from his defense, because it is very confusing for a SaaS business, because you have deferred income, you have, you know, even tying back the service being delivered to the software itself is a bit tricky. Like when you're selling widgets, you know, if there's no widgets in the warehouse, then you know it should be somewhere and you should have been billed for it. But it's not like that for software. And oftentimes, well, I got started, certainly, we didn't really think about billing. Like you just get going and then you get enough revenue where you should think about billing. And then you find out, well, this software costs like 20 grand sometimes for like 1.5 to 3% of turnover. It's incredibly expensive to get going. And you're just like, oh, God damn it. You know, like, well, but I think the biggest thing I hear from your story is it's easy for the staff not to catch that or realize it's important, right? So someone, you can say it's training, but a euphemism is like that they don't feel it in their pocket. And then they were like, well, let's just keep the customers happy. And success can very easily just do things for customers. And there's no awkward moment where you have to ask for money or send the invoice or follow up on the invoice and stuff. So what process did you put in place to make sure that could never happen again? He says, hoping you did. But anyway, let's find out. How could that never happen again? What process did you put in place?
Regular balance sheet reconciliations. You do that once a month, you find that immediately, right? Because what it does is when you mark it as paid, it says cash came in according to the books and the invoice was paid. And then when you reconcile, you're like, wait a minute, according to the actual bank account, that cash never came in. Yeah. Same thing, you know, with any asset or liability, it just completely alters your financial statements. So kind of going back to the owner, right? How many small business owners aren't checking their financials on a regular basis because that is boring and not interesting and it comes across their desk, and half the time, to their, again, to their credit, they don't actually even know what they're looking at. And that I think can be kind of hard for a business owner to admit, but I know a lot of business owners, you know, it's not like everybody went to business school. It's not like we were all taught accounting 101. And so maybe they are reviewing the report, but they don't even really know what they're looking at or what it means. He was looking at the financials and his finance team was providing them to him, but they were confident that they were right. They had no indication that they weren't right. So no alarm bells are being set off for him, right? Other than there's no cash. So whether you're reviewing your financial statements regularly or not, this can still happen. But that, again, that balance sheet reconciliation changes everything. And when your balance sheet is reconciled and correct, your profit and loss statement and your cash flow statement are also correct. So everything just lines up and is 100% accurate 100% of the time.
Well, I have a hot take here on what happens, which is that you start off with a bookkeeper and It is intimidating. Let's face it. I've been in business decades and I still don't understand all my books. And that's a terrible thing to admit, but like there are still things, there's still lots of jargon gets thrown away. And if you try and ask questions of the person doing the work, it's easy for people to get defensive quickly, you know?
Of course.
And it's easy for jargon to get thrown in. Oh, that's a journal entry. This is a, you know, this has been accrued for and this has been amortized. And next thing you don't know what's going on. You just, you know, hold on. I went to programming school, not accounting school. And next thing you're totally out of control. So a reason to have a fractional CFO is, and I think a big mistake is to carry that across to your fractional CFO. Like they're exactly the person you can ask the dumb questions to, quote unquote dumb. And my approach now, tell me how you think about this. My approach now is that my CFO's job is to explain the accounts and the financing of the business to me. Like it's not my job to become an accounting expert. I'm like, unless the accounts are in a way that I can understand, then my account team is not doing the job they need to do. It's not good enough to just pay the taxes, which they should do. They should do, but they've got to have it. Unless I'm crystal clear what's happening, like then, you know, this is a great thing that a bookkeeper is not going to do for you, like, and even a, maybe not a controller. But if you have that CFO person, they're kind of that sandwich between it. You can give them the feedback of what you want. You're not criticizing anyone because it's not a criticism. It's difficult to do. But then they can relay and they know how to speak the language and create that medium, you know, intermediary. So,
yeah, I think in my experience, the CFO is responsible for interpreting that data, like you said. And then also cluing in the business owner to what that means for the business. So what does that mean we need to do next? What does that mean this will look like in 3 months or 6 months or in a year if we stay on this trajectory? Mm. It should really be about action items for the business owner and the business as a whole and feed into the strategy of the business. Whereas a CPA even, or a tax professional or any of these other finance professionals are responsible for maybe interpreting the data, really just delivering the data to the business owner. And then that's it. That's where they end. And my favorite part as a CFO is to take it and say, okay, what is this story actually telling us? And what do we need to change in order to change the ending of this story?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a little bit about your own practice development, because you seem to, from what I can see here, being on the marketing side, you've been doing pretty well. And maybe you can tell us about your own practice and the systems. You have a sort of a three-step process when you bring on a client. Tell me about that and why do you, you know, how's it going?
Yeah. So this is actually a side of the business that is really new for me. It's been about a year and a half. So we've been in business for, we're coming up on 5 years. And we just, you know, we're doing what we knew how to do for 4 of those 5 years, maybe 3.5, right? We just, clients would come in, we would take them, we would find the red flags and we would learn something new about their industry and, you know, try and deliver really good work. And then during this time, I was with a business coach who really specialized in marketing for accountants. And she's incredible. Her name's Amanda Watts. And she really challenged me to figure out who I was working with and how I worked with them and get that on paper. And I was like, well, you just don't understand, you know, it just depends on what kind of situation they're in or what they need. And she really challenged that thought. She really, you know, pushed back on me and said, I don't think it does. And so after a little bit of time with her, I definitely got a little bit better at saying what I do and how I do it in a way that didn't come across in all that accountant jargon. I got consistent at marketing. It cracks me up that you think that we're successful at marketing because I have no idea what I'm doing. I do it all myself. I'm just throwing things at the wall over here. But she helped me define my process. And through this experience that we just talked about and other experiences very much like it at varying levels, I discovered that there were 3 things that I wanted to bring to business owners. The first was clarity. The second was structure and systems. And the third was profitability. And you know, as I kind of figured this out, and that's what I wanted to do for business owners, I really discovered that they have to go in order. When you try and implement a structure or systems before figuring out what the business owner wants from the business, what their goals are financially and personally as a business owner, without understanding what problems are happening in the business right now, the systems are irrelevant at that point. If you're not, you know, pulling the bodies out of the balance sheet right from the get-go, systems are really not going to do you any good. And so, and then, and you cannot and will not reach profitability in the sense that I want it, where it's consistent, it's predictable. We know when it's coming and how it's coming and how much is coming without that clarity and structure happening first. And so that became our roadmap for success for all business owners, regardless of situation, regardless of the scope of work, regardless of what level of business they were at, whether they were pre-rev or doing 25 million, it didn't matter. It was, you know, if we come in and provide a lot of clarity and then we provide systems and structure, profitability comes naturally, it seems. And then we just ramp that up. You know, we provide more strategy. We talk about how we're reinvesting that profitability. We interpret all of the data that came before to just continue to cycle that through in a way that aligns with what the owner wants and what the business really needs. So, okay. Yeah.
Okay. So let me throw a common objection at you to see how we're going, right? So when people hear about these systems, I think what you're saying is the fancy words, and what business owners sometimes can hear is, I need to pay this person for 6 months before I'm going to see any value. Like, or, you know, like there's this idea, well, so how do you cope with that? Like, do you just say, listen, you got to, it's not going to work any other way. You either want to work this way or not, but believe me, or do you have any strategies for delivering value early?
A little bit of both, right? Because I definitely will say it won't work if we can't do it in order, because I tried and it didn't work. I try and jump into strategic planning and then, you know, 6 months later, I figure out that there are no systems in place for balancing the reconciliations, then we actually did just waste 6 months together and you paid me for nothing because all the advice I gave you was based off of data that isn't real. And so scrap it at that point. It's irrelevant.
So if you had a client, would you turn down a client if they were saying, listen, I really need to see some improvement here, or, you know, within, because 6 months is a long time in business, right? So would you turn down a client who's not willing to say, listen, I'm willing to wait 6 months and work for you 6 months before we get some return here?
Well, I would just come back and say, 6 months is not my time frame for getting this done. Like in the story we just told, I found that money in 30 days. So I'm not over here saying, hey, we have to do this whole process and it's going to take me 6 months. So give me 6 months. I'm saying we're going to do this process and we're going to do it in order, but you're going to feel relief immediately. You will, regardless, that clarity alone, which I can get really quickly, is going to take such a weight off of business owners' shoulders. Even if they don't think that's their problem, it's so crazy as business owners how we just get so much noise in our heads of everything that has to be done. And business owners do not realize, myself included, but we don't realize that the noise itself of just worry in the back of our heads that isn't even conscious, maybe, of is there going to be cash in the bank, takes up so much energy and so much time. And so when I come in and I just immediately can tell you there will be cash in the bank and I will make sure of it, and that is now my job, the weight already lifts. So from the moment they sign the contract, there should be relief and improvement and value if I'm doing my job well. But my system is non-negotiable. So it's a waste of everyone's time and money if we don't follow the system.
Okay, very good. You handle that well. I thought I'd just throw you in the deep end there, and because it's the pre-sale and post-sale sort of situation, you know, like it's the handling. There's always sort of a little bit of buyer's remorse. You got to cater for that. You got to, you know, you have the hopes and dreams before you engage anyone, like our software consultants, or whatever. And suddenly, the second you pay, it's like, hold on, where's the reality? Now there's a time. Now there's a clock, you know. So that's something we all have to deal with in business. Okay, now, over this time, you've worked with a coach. I know one of the other things coaches love doing is like really helping you decide on who's your ideal customer. They can't stop talking about it, ICPs. So with your coach, who have you figured out? Who do you really love working with? And who, having listened to this, should reach out to you based on the conversation if they like what they've heard so far?
Yeah, so I will say that we tend to attract and work with mostly women-owned businesses, partially because obviously, I am a woman and my entire team is women. So that seems to come naturally. And it does change a lot of things about how we help people, because there's just another level involved when it's a woman-owned business. That said, probably 30% of my clients are not women-owned businesses. And so really the thing that I specialize in is businesses who are looking for that transformational CFO, meaning that they are in, you know, they are at point A and there's some traction here and there's definitely growth happening, but this could be pre-rev still, you know, but there's interest, there's a need, the market is there, and they have to get to point B and they have to do it very quickly with very limited resources. So any business of any industry that is in that space should really be reaching out to me because I specialize in using very limited resources to get you from point A to point B in a way that doesn't ruin your life as a business owner. Because
okay, let me flip this around then. Are definitely who can you definitely not work with? Like, is a company too small? Is a company too big? Is a company too far away? Is a company not working in English? You know, let's try and think of it that way. So who would
Definitely there are companies too small, I think, is not relevant. I work with brand new businesses to help them get off the ground. Yeah, I guess too small is not a number for me, but maybe if it's an idea in your head from your basement that has no market research, that maybe is too small, you know. Other than that, there is a point in which businesses need a full-time in-house team, and I will absolutely recommend that if they are at that place. But again, that doesn't come from a number of revenue. It comes from industry plus revenue plus, you know, the goals and mission of the business and where they're going. So that does not answer your question very well, but we take a pretty broad scope of people.
That's okay, Joey. Yeah.
Within that, you know, area of business. They've got to grow, they've got to do it quickly, and they don't have a lot of resources to do it.
Well, what I hear there is very nice and inclusive. So people are liking the vibes of the way you're approaching business here. It seems like you're very inclusive. You're not going to rule anyone out. And that's a kind of welcoming, nice, refreshing change, to be honest, sometimes people. So, okay. So the reason I think you're so great at business is because you have a podcast, and we all know that anyone who has a podcast is instantly really successful. So I want you to tell me about your podcast, because it's got some interesting content over there. I think people should think about checking it out. If you've listened to this, I've got a hunch maybe they should listen to you too.
Yeah. Our podcast is, in full transparency, a fun thing that we did for ourselves, 100% for ourselves. It is so fun to get my team together and just talk about our experiences and what we've done. And then once a month, we also feature a female founder who is making waves in their industry. I think we need more of that in the world, of highlighting these sometimes really small, you know, unheard of, obscure businesses who are extremely profitable. I mean, to me, revenue is vanity, but profitability, right, is sanity. That's a quote from someone who I don't know, but it's the ones that are maybe not making the headlines and not out here on the Wall Street Journal, but are actually raking in tons of money and doing exactly what they set out to do, that I like to highlight. And so we highlight female founders once a month. And then on the other episode of the month, we do whatever we feel like. So we talk about financial horror stories that we've seen similar to this one. We talk about, we have an out of office one where we literally just are chatting about what TV shows we're watching and what we're doing to relieve the stress of tax time. We have, yeah, a lot of amazing guests on there teaching us about how to run a business. And it's like free business coaching for me. It's really amazing. I love it. I love it.
Very good. And how can people, maybe they think they'd be a good guest if they're a female founder with a under the radar business. How can they reach out to you, Joey?
Yeah, our website, theprofitabilityproject.com, is a great place to send me your information if you want to connect. Our on social media, Instagram is our big one as well. So the Profitability Project LLC is our handle. And we get a lot of questions over there as well. So people will private message us, and we do Q&As on our Instagram a lot of the time. And we post a lot of educational content. So if you're not quite sure that you're ready to take the leap into a fractional CFO, if you're not ready, definitely follow us over there or on LinkedIn. My personal LinkedIn, we post a lot of educational content that can hopefully get you by until you're ready.
Very good. Okay. Well, thanks. And thank you for listening. If you've got this far into the podcast, your special reward. Since we've been talking about financial horror stories, we've revamped our newsletter, Joey. We changed it. So now at the head of every newsletter, we focus on three Well, actually, I'll tell you, I'll be honest, we're working on the wording here. We're calling the controller car crash TV. So we're basically picking out three finance mess ups from the previous weeks from the headlines. So we've had everyone in there. We've had Naomi Campbell, remember her? She got herself into hot water for running a charity that only gave out 8% of its proceeds to the beneficiaries. We've got local municipalities who get into hot water by misappropriating funds or just not being able to track funds, which is obviously very in the news these days. And we've got stories from SMBs who have been defrauded by their staff and their sometimes their accountants and other people. So if you're into that, if you want to watch out, if you want to keep an eye on what to watch out for, keep on your toes, you can go to procurementexpress.com/newsletter. It costs you absolutely nothing to sign up there. So I'd encourage you to do that. This has been a lot of fun, Joey. Thanks for being on the show.
Yes. Thank you, James. Appreciate it.